Good morning, everyone. My name is Sampath. I'm the engineering manager for Public Folders. And today, we are going to look at some of the new features that we've introduced with Public Folders in the areas of scale, performance, and migration. By the end of the session, you should have enough information that will allow you to decide to either upgrade to the latest version of Exchange or migrate your public folders to the cloud. Before we get started, a quick check on the versions of Exchange that you all have been using for public folders. So do we have anyone who's using public folders on 2007? Woo! All right. Time's ticking. What about public folders on Exchange 2010?
Oh, half of the audience. All right.
How about 2013?
All right, you guys are brave.
2016?
All right, that's leading edge.
Okay. So, with the topics that we cover today, I'm sure everyone will have a good answer, either to upgrade or to move to the cloud, right? With that, let's get started with our agenda for today. We'll first start with what's new in public folders. That's most of today's session. Followed by a quick demo. Then we chat about the roadmap for public folders. And finally, some time for Q&A. If you run out of time, I'll be around in the booth. I'll be more than happy to chat with you. With that, let's get started with some of the new features, because I'm going to run you through a bunch of features. We'll have an overview of what those features are. We first talk about full sync throttling. So this is a new feature in public folder that will allow the full sync to be throttled. So it's not going to be uncontrolled anymore. Then we look at a new feature that's going to protect your primary public folder mailbox. So as you know, the primary public folder mailbox plays a very critical role because it serves as the master for hierarchy. So keeping the load on primary public folder as low as possible is going to be good for the health of the system. We then look at push sync. This is yet another enhancement to the hierarchy synchronization. We then talk about partial hierarchy. This feature is very key to scale public folder hierarchy to up to 1 million on the cloud. We then look at some of the enhancements that we've done to migration, specifically post-migration to the cloud. We'll also look at our support for Outlook for Mac. We'll talk about the supported topologies. We then talk about one of the features that everyone's been waiting for, migrating public folders from 2013 or 16 to the cloud. So that's a quick summary. Let's get started with full sync throttling. So what is full sync throttling? A full sync is the process that a secondary mailbox initiates to get the complete contents of the hierarchy. So a secondary mailbox contacts the primary mailbox and it requests the entire copy of the hierarchy to be synced down This operation could take a couple minutes, a couple hours, or a couple of days, depending on the load on the primary public folder mailbox. We all know primary public folder mailbox is the master for the hierarchy. So throttling is a feature that is going to restrict the maximum number of parallel full syncs that can happen at any given point of time. So clearly we want to keep the load on the primary public folder mailbox as low as possible. So throttling is a feature that's going to help the primary public folder mailbox actively communicate with the secondary mailboxes and tell them to back off if it's overloaded. So what would it result in? If there was an uncontrolled access to primary public folder mailbox, it would result in resource contention. If I have 15 secondary public folder mailboxes all trying to get the entire copy of the hierarchy, the primary public folder mailbox is going to be under stress. It would result in the syncs taking longer. With throttling in place, the effective time to sync down the hierarchy changes is going to be reduced. And again, a full synchronization will happen not every day. It's going to be the first time a secondary mailbox needs the copy. Following a full synchronization is what we call a delta sync, means only the deltas get synchronized from then on. So let's take an example. So in this example, I have the primary public folder mailbox to the right, sorry, to the left. And we have 5 brand new secondary public folder mailboxes. Say brand new to say that that's the only time, or that's one of the reasons why secondary public folder mailboxes would get to the primary mailbox for the entire contents of the hierarchy. With full sync in place, when the secondary mailboxes contact the primary public folder mailbox for the entire contents of the hierarchy, it is going to keep track of the number of active sessions. So when the first mailbox connects, it's fine. When the second one connects, still okay. All the way up to the 10th mailbox. The moment the 11th mailbox contacts the primary public folder mailbox for a full sync, it is going to actively return a message telling that it has to back off, which means the primary public folder mailbox is going to service the 10 requests and only then accept additional requests. This happens all the way till any number of mailboxes that contact. Once the 10 connections are drained, the public folder mailbox is going to continue allowing more connections. So this is a feature very, very important as we continue to scale public folders, and extremely important for the performance of public folders due to the role the primary public folder mailbox. Next, let's look at yet another feature that's going to protect the primary public folder mailbox. So if you remember, the primary public folder mailbox is the first mailbox that you create. And by default, it serves the hierarchy, which means when clients connect to the public folder subsystem, the primary public folder mailbox also participates in serving down the hierarchy. Given the critical role of the primary public folder mailbox, it's important that you separate the hierarchy serving role from the public folder, the primary public folder mailbox. That's the essence of this feature. The public folder subsystem automatically checks if there are additional mailboxes that are set to serve hierarchy and are ready. If so, it magically flips the bit on the primary public folder mailbox and removes it from serving the hierarchy. What this results in is simple. There is reduced load on the primary public folder mailbox. This happens automatically, which means as we keep scaling, we ensure that the primary is always in good shape. Right. Let's take a simple example and see what would have happened without protect primary public folder mailbox. So in this picture, you can see a bunch of Outlook clients talking to the public folder subsystem using AutoDiscover. If you look at the AutoDiscover cache, it has the names of every public folder mailbox which has been set to serve hierarchy. So in this picture, all the root nodes which have a light background are going to serve hierarchy, and the root nodes that have a dark background are set not to serve hierarchy. So which means we have 4 public folder mailboxes which can serve hierarchy, and that's reflected in the AutoDiscover cache. Based on the cache, each of the clients are going to get one of the public folder mailboxes to connect to so that the hierarchy can be browsed. With the protect primary public folder, protect primary public folder mailbox feature enabled, you will see that the system automatically detects that there are sufficient mailboxes that are ready to serve hierarchy and automatically flips the bit on the primary public folder mailbox, which means admin does not need to configure this anymore. The primary is automatically removed from serving hierarchy. And this is again reflected in the AutoDiscover cache. You can see that AutoDiscover cache has mailboxes 1, 2, and 3. And not the primary public folder mailbox anymore. Clearly, this is required if we want to continue scaling public folders and have a great experience with public folders. Next, let's look at push sync. Push sync is yet another feature to manage public folder hierarchy at scale. As we increase the number of mailboxes, specifically public folder mailboxes, it's very important that the primary public folder mailbox can service them and work. Push sync ensures that all the changes required to be sent to the secondary mailboxes go in the form of notification as opposed to pull. So let's figure out what this is. Anytime there is a change in hierarchy, today it is the responsibility of the secondary mailboxes to contact the primary mailbox to check if there is a change. Changes are then sent down to the secondary mailbox, which are synced. As the number of mailboxes increase, you can see that more and more connections are made to the primary public folder mailbox just to check if there has been a change to the hierarchy. This can put the primary public folder mailbox at a very high load. What PushSync does is just, it inverts the responsibility. So PushSync ensures that all the changes that happen are magically sent down to the secondary public folder mailboxes, so that now they contact the primary only if they're absolutely sure that there has been a change. What this means would be the number of network calls are surely reduced, because I now know when I need to contact the primary, and also the total number of connections to the primary is greatly reduced. It's surely reduced from a fixed number of connections every delta interval to connections only when it is really required. So how does PushSync do this? PushSync uses transport to get the messages delivered. Let's look at how the sync happens without PushSync. So in this picture, you can see that there's a primary public folder mailbox, and we have the root node with the dark background saying that protect primary feature is enabled by default, and the primary is no longer serving hierarchy. But there are two folders that are created, that's D and E. There are a bunch of secondary mailboxes, mailbox 1 to mailbox 99 in this picture, that need to know this change. Without PushSync, each of those mailboxes would periodically poll the primary public folder mailbox to check if there was a change, and then if there was a change, the changes are going to be synced down. Obviously, even if there was no change, the connections are still made. With PushSync, transport comes into play, and you'll see that the primary public folder mailbox now computes exactly one message for a change at any given point. And the same message is transmitted to all the secondary mailboxes. So which means the computation on the primary public folder mailbox is also reduced. Instead of computing those changes 100 times for each of the mailboxes, it's going to compute them exactly once. But in order for it to compute the change exactly once and send it down to the secondary mailboxes, the condition that the secondary mailbox must satisfy is that it has the full copy of the hierarchy to start with. As long as the secondary mailboxes are all at the same level, they all can process the same message, right? Which means PushSync requires one full sync to happen, right? And the first sync is to ensure that the secondary mailbox has all the changes it needs, and from that point on, deltas are just transmitted to everyone. So that's PushSync. Let's talk about partial hierarchy. All the features that we spoke here have to do something with the hierarchy, and clearly you know why these changes are so critical. Partial hierarchy takes synchronization to the next level. If you noticed the previous slides, even though I didn't call out, there was mailbox 1 and 2 which were serving hierarchy, and mailbox number 99 there was not serving hierarchy. But still, the entire copy of the hierarchy is stored on all the mailboxes, whether or not they serve hierarchy. That's the way the subsystem has been working. Partial hierarchy is optimizing exactly those. So depending on the number of mailboxes that are not serving hierarchy, you will see that the number of full syncs, the number of deltas are going to increase, but we could cut down on that. Partial hierarchy clearly works there. Partial hierarchy sends only the required changes to the mailboxes, which means if the mailbox is serving hierarchy, it does need a full copy of the hierarchy, so it can optimize there. But if the mailbox is not serving hierarchy, the other role it could play is owner of a content. So it could be the content owner for folder X, in which case only changes to the structure related to X needs to be synced down to that particular mailbox. That's the principle of partial hierarchy, and that's what it does. And clearly, for us to get to a million and beyond, partial hierarchy is a must-have. So let's see how partial hierarchy works. I already explained, prior to partial hierarchy, you can see that of these mailboxes, for mailbox 1 and mailbox 2 and mailbox 3 participate in serving hierarchy. That's the light background on the root nodes. Mailbox 4 and 5 do not participate in serving hierarchy. Also, the folders in orange denote who's the owner of the content. So in this case, mailbox 1 owns folder D, mailbox 2 owns folder C, mailbox 3 owns folder A, 4 and 5 own B and E respectively. Once partial hierarchy kicks in, you will notice that the mailboxes that are not participating in the hierarchy exactly get what they need, which means they are no longer going to contain the entire copy of the hierarchy. This means a lot to customers who are running public folders with a million folders in the hierarchy or more. Just imagine, as the number of mailboxes increase, how this would play. That's partial hierarchy. Let's look at post-migration changes. So today, when you migrate public folders to 2016, or you migrate public folders to the cloud, the hierarchy is served only by the primary public folder mailbox immediately after the cutover, which means there is only one mailbox which is capable of serving hierarchy immediately after migration. What this would mean is that if you have a large number of users who are going to access public folders, the experience or the browse experience right after migration is not going to be optimal. You would have planned for n number of hierarchy serving mailboxes, but because you just did a migration, there's only one mailbox which is capable of serving hierarchy, and which is the primary public folder mailbox. So we've made changes to the migration scripts so that the moment you complete your migration and you're ready to cut over either to 2016 or to the cloud, the migration code ensures that all the mailboxes which were expected to serve hierarchy has a complete copy of the hierarchy and they're ready to serve. Which means the auto discover cache would be populated with all the mailboxes that you expected, and not just the primary public folder mailbox. Next, coming to Outlook for Mac. So how many of you use Outlook for Mac to connect to the public folder subsystem? Okay, not too many, but still, yeah. I'm sure you'll be glad with this slide. So one of the problems that customers have had with Outlook for Mac is that while they are in a hybrid topology, access to public folders is not possible. And that's the support that we've added. So now Mac clients can discover and access public folders in hybrid topologies. We'll look at what they are shortly. What this means is that organizations who want to move to the cloud can now do so without losing access to public folders during the migration, right? So let's see the matrix of supported topologies. Again, this is Outlook for Mac. Outlook already supports them, Outlook for Windows. So we're taking a look at where the user mailbox is located and where our public folders are located. So the first one is user mailbox in 2010 and public folder mailbox in 2010, must work. The yes in blue means it was already supported. This is not a new support that we've added. User mailbox in 2013/16 and public folders in 2010, kind of supported, that's coexistence. User mailbox on the cloud and public folder mailbox on 2010, sorry, that's not a supported topology. The next one's user mailbox on 2010 and public folders on 2013, not supported. User mailbox on 2013/16 and public folders on 2013, supported. When the user mailbox is in the cloud and public folder mailboxes are on 2013, this is now a supported topology. Outlook for Mac clients can discover public folders in a hybrid setup like this, and it can continue to access. 2010 and 2016, not supported. The other two are again coexistence. User mailbox on 2013/16 and public folders on 2016. The last one is again hybrid, and we support it now. So you have user mailboxes on the cloud and public folder mailboxes on 2016, I'm sorry, public folders on 2016. It's a supported topology. User on 2010 and public folders on the cloud, not supported. But if you have your user on 2013 and public folders on the cloud, this is an interesting one. It's the reverse of the regular hybrid that we do. It is a supported topology. And I like to touch upon why we would even attempt something like this. So we added this support because users have public folders in 2010 and their user mailboxes on 2013. Now, if they want to migrate to the cloud, the option they had prior to this was that they first migrate public folders to 2013 or 2016 and then again migrate them to the cloud. But with this topology supported, with their user mailboxes still on 2013, they can directly move public folders all the way from 2010 to the cloud. And that's this topology which is going to be supported, right? Obviously, the guidance always is to take the user mailboxes first to the cloud, but there are scenarios wherein customers can benefit from doing this. The next one is similar, user mailboxes on 2016 and public folder mailboxes on the cloud. And the last one is easy, user mailboxes and public folder mailboxes on the cloud. It's always supported. Last, we look at Public folders 2013/16, migration to the cloud. This is one of the features that the team has been working for the past 9 months. And we're very happy to announce that we are now accepting TAP customers to validate this migration. What this means is now if you chose to stay with public folders in 2010, because there was no migration path to the cloud, you no longer have to wait at 2010. 2013-16 migration is built on the foundations of batch migration, which means data gets copied in parallel. That's the essence of batch migration. The only difference between the migration happening from 2013-16 with those from 2007 or 10 is the fact that the data copy no longer uses MAPI, it uses MRS proxy. So we have better control and better capabilities for accessing the source. Last, we've tried to keep it as similar as possible to the existing migration, which means the way you do migration from 2007-10 to the cloud is exactly or almost similar to the way you do migration from 2013-16 to the cloud. All right, with that, let's take a small demo now. And that demo is nothing other than migrating public folders from 2013-16 to the cloud. For the sake of the demo, I have a lab set up wherein I have Exchange 2013 installed in one of the boxes. And I have Office 365 bits on yet another box. That's going to be our destination for migration today. So we'll quickly run through the steps for migration. Before I jump to the migration box, we'll just summarize what it takes to do the migration. We enable access to your source, which could be Outlook anywhere if you're 2007-10. If you're doing 2013-16, it's going to be access to MRS proxy, similar to your user migration. Next, you make sure that you run the migration scripts to get the statistics of your public folder. So that's mostly around the folders you have and the size of those folders. What you do next is now map all these source folders to folders in your target. You're going to do a migration. Where are they going to land, on the cloud or on 2016? Either way. And then finally, start your migration batch. Migration batch is the process that copies data out from your source into the cloud or your destination. Right? That's super high level, the steps that you do with migration. You complete the batch and you cut over. That's what's going to happen. So now we'll switch to my demo box. And to save time, I've already got a few of the prereqs done, which means I've already finished executing the script to get the my folder statistics. I've already finished executing the script that can map my folders on the source to folders on destination. I've also created the endpoint, which means now the destination needs to know where is the source and how the source can be contacted. Right? So those steps are done, which means now it's time for us to create the migration batch and get it going. Before we get there, let's just see what we have in the source. So I have two windows here. The blue window here, the PowerShell window that you see, is actually a remote session to my target. So in this case, I have a remote session. That's what you do typically. You connect to the cloud. So you open up a remote session. So that's what I have set up here. And the window behind it, the black one, is your on-prem. So let's look at the source. This is the source. Let's look at what the source has. So that's my cheat sheet. So let's quickly look at. Copy? All right. So I just get this. And let's see what the source has. I say get public folder recurs, get folder statistics, and it just tells me all the folders that I have and the count of items inside, just to know what they have. Yeah, this is an easy one. So I have a bunch of folders, very few items inside them. So that's what we had in the source. Let's move to the target. Target's my remote PowerShell session. At this point, I should not have anything in the target because I'm going to start a new migration. Let's go to the target. All right, there I am. So I wouldn't have anything at the target. Let's hope that there's nothing. But there's the no public folders provision, which is perfect. Once you have the map file is going to say what from the source is going to go where to the target. I have that generated already. That's map.csv. And you can see that the target mailbox is mailbox one. And source folder path is slash, which means everything from the source goes to one particular mailbox in the target. So what I need to do next is create the target mailbox, which means on the cloud, I'm going to create my mailbox and then get the migration started. Right? So I start with the first command there. I just say create a new mailbox. That. Right? I say hold for migration is true, saying that this is created for the migration, so that the mailbox is created. Then we get our migration batch started. Like I said, migration batch is going to require the mapping, which means the migration batch needs to know what it needs to copy into which mailbox. So I say get content map.csv. And it also needs to know how it can get the content. So the how is specified using the endpoint. I say source endpoint there. Excuse me. The source endpoint is the endpoint to MRS proxy, right? The connection to MRS proxy. So let's get, so let's get the migration batch started. So I say new migration batch, I give a name for this batch, and the migration batch is started. What the migration batch has internally done is it attempts to contact the source, verifies that the endpoint was fine. It also verifies that the destination mailbox exists for every mapping that I have provided. So it's a bunch of validations because it's simplistic, it just got there so quick. What's going to happen behind scenes is that the migration batch is going to create a job, and the job is now going to start pulling data from the source and putting it on the destination mailbox. Again, this could take minutes, hours, or days, depending on how much data you have and how much bandwidth you're willing to allocate for the migration job. So you can check the status of the migration by running your get migration batch. It's going to give you a super high level status of the batch. It's going to say syncing, or it's going to say sync, it's still syncing. If you want to get more details about the migration batch, you can always run the commandlet here. It says get public folder mailbox migration request, piping that to request statistics. So what this is going to do, it's going to give you a more detailed statistics about what the job is actually doing. So ignore the first three. There were the previous attempts that we tried. So it says sync here, which means the migration job has now completed one full sync of your source to the destination. And as you can see, the percentage complete says 95 here. It also means that the job will now periodically perform delta syncs to ensure that all the data is copied over. As an administrator, you would now choose the correct window to actually perform the cutover. It means all this time, anyone is free to access public folders and add more data to it. So which means everyone can access public folders. At a point where you want to cut over, you want to make sure that people can no longer access public folders. So obviously you need to run this at the source. I need to go to my source now and say, hey, make sure that all new connections to public folders are no longer allowed. So I say set organization config, public folder mailbox is locked for new connections. At this point, existing connections will still continue to work. They would be drained off only when you attempt to do the final copy, which is complete migration batch. So you go back to the source, you go back to your remote session and say, hey, we are ready to complete the batch now. What this means would be all the existing connections, all the existing active connections to the public folder mailbox will now be disconnected, and a final copy of all the contents would be made to the destination. At this point, you can go and verify the destination. So the easy way to verify would be to just check if the hierarchy is still around. This time you want to do it at the destination. But the complete migration batch is asynchronous, which means even though the commandlet just returned, it would take a while for it to perform the final sync. So if you look at this now, I'm looking at the statistics again to make sure that the batch gets to a completed state. So you can just see that it's still in sync state, which means it needs little more time to complete the migration. So you run it a couple times. Again, this would take a couple minutes to hours, depending on how much data you have. So in this case, you see it's already reaching almost the finalizing stage, which is saying that, hey, I'm just doing some cleanup. And towards the end, you see that now the mailbox migration, the public folder migration is complete, and the percentage complete is 100%. At this point, you know that nobody has access to public folders, and the final copy is done, which means you can now verify your public folders at your destination and get ready for the cutover. So here's my destination, and I'm just doing a get public folder recurse, and you will see that the same hierarchy is now available here which means, hey, the migration is successful. What you need to do next is ensure that public folders is no longer remote. So on the target, I'm going to enable public folders. So I'm saying set organization config, public folders enabled, and I'm saying it's local. And finally, you get to the source and ensure that you lock the source down once and for all, signaling that the migration itself is complete. So at this point, you have nobody who needs to go to the source, and the subsystem now knows that the migration itself is complete. What the migration complete flag would do is that any emails that were sent to mail-enabled public folders would now be rerouted to the cloud. Right? Until now, all those mails would have been kept in the queue, but now they would be rerouted. And that's about the migration. That's that simple, doing it from 2013-16 this time. We have a few minutes left. Let's look at the roadmap. So scale roadmap, extremely important for public folders. We'll look at the scale roadmap for Office 365. Where were we? We were at 100,000 folders, 100 mailboxes, and 2,000 connections per mailbox. Where are we today? We recently announced the support for 1,000 mailboxes. We have the same 100K support and 2,000 connections. Where are we going? We'll continue increasing them. A point to note here, even though I say we are at 100K folders, we are running TAP programs and taking customers with up to 500,000 folders to the cloud. So clearly you will see a lot of blog posts on that, and the TAP programs are already open. On-premises, we were at 1 million folders, 100 mailboxes, and 2,000 connections. Where we are today, as of 2016 CU2, we announced the support for 1,000 mailboxes, and we'll continue improving there on the mailbox and connection count. So what's a feature roadmap look like? So scale is super important for public folders. We'll continue to work on this feature. We also have had multiple requests from customers for usage reporting. People don't know if people are even accessing public folders or are they just lying around there. Right? This is very important when administrators need to know how to clean up public folders. But that's going to be only one part of the equation. Figuring out what is not used, then figuring out whether they can remove it is going to be a harder question. Right? Public folders, migration to Office 365, you already saw the announcement. We continue making this better. Public folders to group migrations. So we strongly believe that there are some scenarios that customers are using public folders for today, and we think groups might be their destination. Again, not all of public folder scenarios would work well in groups, but if there are scenarios related to collaboration, we believe groups is the right destination. So we'll provide enough tooling to make sure that customers can migrate public folder data into groups and seamlessly start using groups. We also have work with AAD Connect. This is to ensure that all the mail-enabled public folders are now available in AAD and not just EXF. This will make sure that public folder SMTP address or public folder mail enabled public folder will now be visible even on AAD. Why that will be useful? Other workloads in AAD will now know that there is mail enabled public folder. If somebody else will be able to. Last but not least, we're also having policies to enable and disable public folders. One of the other requests we've got from large customers is that not everyone in the organization requires access to public folders. So there's a policy that we'll be building to ensure that the administrator can control this. Quickly, we'll run through the TAP programs. I already covered that. So we're looking for customers who want to migrate their data from 2013-16 to the cloud. The TAP programs are open. You can go to AKAMS, Modern PF TAP. We're also looking for customers who can migrate from 2010 to Office 365 with folder counts greater than 100K. A lot of customers are not willing to get to the cloud because 100K is not enough. We have more than 100K. There's another easy way. You want to sign up for TAP, meet us at the booth, and that you can instantly be enrolled to the TAP. Last but not least, please do attend group sessions to understand how groups can solve your collaboration scenarios. There are a bunch of sessions that are upcoming. Also, do take our survey, AKAMS PF Survey 2006. Tell us about your deployments. Tell us what feature you would like to see in public folders. And please rate this session. All right. Not sure why this came up. So thank you.